Right. This talk is about a bit of code which I've been working on for the last, on and off for the last 6 months or so, of some new code for putting together menus and toolbars, that sort of part of the user interface of GTK applications. It's currently residing in a library called DBEG, which we are using as for prototyping and stuff. In the future, it's going to be, it'll probably move down to another library, but it's in a design phase at the moment. In the talk, first we're going to be talking a bit about just generally what LibEgg is, then move on to some information about the development process we are using in GNOME now and some of the reasons for those changes. Then after that, take a bit of a look at the LibEgg API and hopefully we'll give some idea of why you might want to use this API rather than the existing menu and toolbar APIs in GTK. All right. This is sort of a general API which can be used to handle both the menus and toolbars. So unlike the existing ones, which we've got separate API to interfaces to put together your menus and your toolbars, and this will all integrate nicely together, which is quite nice. And it's in the prototype stage at the moment. Unless something weird, something goes wrong, it'll probably be landing in the GTK 2.4 library, which there isn't any release date set on at the moment, but that might be about 6 months or so. The GNOME development process has changed a lot since the 1.0 release. When we were developing early GNOME, development was basically just whatever each developer was most interested in at the time, and we did not. If there was some particular thing which you were interested in, it would go in, and that was it. There was not really any review or anything, and things could change from week to week. This is all before 1.0. There was the GNOME 1.0 release, which many people probably remember was not all that stable. The main stable thing in it was that it was the first time we were putting in some guarantees of binary compatibility of the development platform. You'll find that most applications which you might compile against GNOME 1.0 would run on a GNOME 1.4 system, or if you've got the development libraries, you can run them on a 2.0 system. The main thing for GNOME 1.x, we were really only providing backward compatibility guarantees. New APIs, new interfaces would sometimes be added from version to version, sometimes good ones, sometimes they were pretty trivial things which mainly caused headaches for people, but we sort of tightened that up quite a bit in the 2.x series, where in a minor series, everyone knows what I mean by minor series, sort of like 2.0, 2.2, that sort of thing, where we try to keep to just sticking to forward and backward binary compatibility so that a program which is compiled against the GNOME libraries 2.0.5 will run on 2.0.1 and modulo any sort of big bugs which you might rely on the fixes for. There probably won't be any big new features in GNOME 2.0. As Jeff was saying in a couple of talks ago, 2.2 is right around the corner, and it's going to be backwards compatible with 2.0, so it should be easy to move up to it, a much, much easier job than moving to 2.0 from the GNOME 1 platform. Before 1.0, we had lots of people with check-in permissions, and there wasn't much of a culture of peer review or anything. So we ended up with a lot of the stuff, and some of the stuff which you can see today in today's GNOME libraries was around back then, and that was the good stuff. There's also a lot of bad stuff which is gone now, and it's really good that it's gone. Back then it was good enough to write a lot of the GNOME desktop on, but I would not have recommended anyone use it to write applications outside of that, because I mean, I suppose in a way it's similar to the kernel, where they've got internally they've got APIs which are not very stable. They've got enough control over the entire code base to be able to upgrade sort of users of an API when it changes, but it's not really, some of those internal APIs you wouldn't recommend for outside code to use. That's we removed a fair bit of the hard to maintain stuff in 1.x, but we also left a lot of it because by the time we got to that stage, we were getting applications outside of the core desktop using it. And it worked out pretty well, but there's still a bit of bad stuff left in the 1.x platform, but I'll give an example of that in a sec. 2.x platform, the main driver of that was the upgrade of GTK 2.0, which added a lot of features, and it included a lot of cleanups as well. At first, we were going to do a minimal upgrade of the GNOME development platform, not break. So it would have just been changed just enough to get everything working on the new version of GTK. But along the line, people realized this would be a really good time to fix up our own APIs. And there was a lot of API changes for 2.0. which did set back the release. It depends on your point of view of whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing. It meant that 2.0 is better than it could have been, and better than it might have been. But then we probably would have got to this stage just with a different version number if we'd released earlier. As we've been moving to the newer versions. We've got the more stability guarantees. It's also means that it's been more difficult to develop new code, because basically every API starts off in a sort of early development stage where you will have problems, design problems, and you don't really want those things to go directly into the development platform. So there's been a number of different procedures which have been introduced to help introduce new features without having to worry about making the main development platform unstable. Just as an example of what we had before GNOME 1.0, does everyone know Bowie? Okay, that's a quote which from one of his posts on GNOME GUI list, I think. It took about 2 days, and someone had implemented it and put it into the library. So. That's about the level of peer review for some of the features we had back then. Basically, the way you'd create one of these things was you just pass in a color object, a structure giving the color, and that would be it. You probably wouldn't have passed muster for GNOME 2.0. Here's some of the problems. There's obvious usability issues. With the way it was intended to be used, these GNOME lamps would be used to display all kinds of information, and they all look pretty much the same. So it's not clear what it does or what you can do with it. can you click on it? Can you? There's internationalization problems. Different cultures associate different meanings with different colors, and they've got this interface where you specify a color, and it'll, and, which is just not really. Yes.
Was it like a status
bar? That's got four gnome, and that's got four gnome lamps next to each other. So. It's yeah, it's sort of. It could be anything. sounded like a good idea at the time, so. Well, that's what the usability list is for. But also, we've got. I mean, it's sort of you can, and new people can still come in and introduce new ideas, and it's just it's not going to go into the development platform 2 days later. Now, we'll want to actually, and we've got a number of people who. We're much better at writing desktop environments than we were 5 years ago, so, or four or 5 years ago, which does help. And we've got experts from Sun and Zimian and other places, so there are people who know about the accessibility issues. And the internationalization team for GNOME is sort of a lot much better developed than it was, so, and they're not afraid to tell you that what you've done makes their job very difficult. So, sort of, and we don't sort of close ourselves to new ideas completely, but yeah, we'll we investigate them more. Although I think Bowie ended up getting banned from some of the lists. He just it's Bowie. Yeah, there was also another interface there, which was where you could give a number of constants, which is a bit better for the internationalization because you could customize it to use colors which you could use colors which were appropriate for the locale. But I don't think any of the few uses of GNOME Lamp ever actually used it. And the accessibility problems. Only, and if you've got the bit of information, only providing it through colour is going to cut your user base. There's people who are fully blind who won't be able to use it. There's colourblind people. So you're going to have to provide the information in some other form, and that other form may be sufficient without the thing. Yeah, there are better ways of doing it. But if you don't know about Bowie, there's sort of a bit of his history at that URL down the bottom. In GTK2, one of the new interfaces we added was a new tree widget, which it was one of the first things which was using some of these new development procedures. It was not developed, even though it shipped in GTK2. The initial design didn't occur within the GTK library. It was all developed outside, and it went through a design procedure looking at existing alternatives like what Qt did, what Swing did, etc., and ended up with a prototype implementation. Yes?
Is it like either Swing or Qt?
It is similar to the Java. It's similar to the Swing interface. I mean, it's got similar ideas. The interface is not identical, but they're actually looking at providing something which is simpler, because the Swing tree interface is actually fairly complicated, and we found that even though the tree widget we've got handles everything we want, in a lot of cases it requires more code than especially beginner programmers. They get intimidated by it, but that's something which is getting improved. It'll probably also, some of those changes will probably also go through a similar process to how this was added. So the design issues within the API were sort of all looked at on the mailing lists. when that was fixed, they moved it into GTK. It wasn't bug-free at that stage, but we could be fairly certain that we had a good interface which we would be able to support. Okay, onto the bit which the talk's actually about. Existing menu and toolbar APIs in GTK, they've got a few problems where if you're writing a large program, you'll probably need a fair bit of code sitting on top of it aimed to handle all your features. There is another API in Bonobo for handling menus and toolbars, which also handles things, adding menus from an embedded component or something, but in a way that has been more harmful than good, because it meant that a lot of GNOME applications, for instance, started off as GTK applications. When those people want to upgrade to use GNOME, at one stage we were saying we should switch to the Bonobo API, which in essence meant rather than just adding a few features to make your application make use of the GNOME stuff, you'd end up rewriting bits of the application. So what it's become apparent, we want a new API in GTK which can support the needs of larger applications, should be simple enough for small applications so that everyone will use it, and should be extendable so that something like Bonobo could use it in the future. I don't know whether it will, but we want to leave that door open. The code for creating menus is fairly simple at the moment. This is the existing toolbar API. You first create a menu bar across the top. You add menu items for things like file menu and edit menu, etc. You add menus, those are menu items. You add a submenu underneath each one, which will pop down when you click on the menu item. Then you add menu items inside the menus, which you can then select. After that, you add callbacks to each of the menu items. It's fairly simple and does what you'd expect. There's also an interface called GTK Item Factory, which can simplify that work quite a bit, but it's still essentially doing the same thing. For toolbars, there's a similar but slightly different API, but there's nothing like Item Factory for it. The problems with that is that what you've written in your code, that pretty much defines what the menus will look like. If at some point you realise that the menu structure is quite bad, since we've got the usability team and stuff, they actually do some testing and they might find that it would be a lot better if you got all your menus some other way, in some other location. You end up having to go through and modify all of that code, and it can introduce bugs, and it's just something it would be nicer if you didn't have to do. The other thing, in a lot of more complex applications, there's more than one way of performing an action. The common one you'll see in an Office application is that you've got the file menu with new, open, save, etc., and you'll have the same things on the toolbar. At the moment, let's say that you just opened a document and you haven't made any modifications, you want to disable the save option. In the existing menu API, you'll have to find the widget for the save menu item and disable that, then do the same on the toolbar and disable it. And it doesn't handle things like menu merging, which is something used in component systems like Bonobo, and there's also, you'll see certain things on Windows like Microsoft Office doing that as well. So one of the big changes is the introduction of objects which we call actions. These basically represent any user action. So that's things like opening a file, saving a file, and opening a new document. It's not actually a menu item, not actually a toolbar button. It'll include a callback to fire when that action gets performed. It'll include things like the label you'd have in the menu item. Maybe you might also include a shorter label to include on a toolbar button. It might have a stock icon to put next to the menu item and put on the toolbar. And the important thing is it includes some state information, such as whether the action is visible, whether the action is enabled or disabled, and things like that. The action then knows how to. There is a function which you can call to produce a menu item which will represent that action, and another one to produce a toolbar button. And so that means whenever you click on the menu item for the action, it'll call the action. If you change the label on the action, it will update the menu item. If you set the action to being disabled, it will disable the menu item, etc. So this can simplify that. This can simplify those sort of things. Yes.
You talk about the generic actions, but it seems like it can be used only in menus and toolbar buttons. Is it possible also to create a normal button with an action, like in Java, or other
Not in the current code we've got, but that would be a very simple modification. This idea of actions is not a new idea, by the way. There's a similar idea in Qt and Java, and you can tell that they must be using something like that in a lot of proprietary applications and other frameworks. I think in Java you can actually pass an action object to the constructor for a button, and you'll have a button which activates the action and gets its text and everything from the action. Jeff?
How are you integrating the JDK?
I haven't written any of that code yet, but the way it'll probably work is there's a couple of ATK objects for and peers for the action objects, and you would see a relation from the ATK object for the menu item or toolbar button, which sort of give a relation to the action objects. That code hasn't been written, but it's probably going to be fairly straightforward. ATK is the Accessibility Toolkit, which is one of the new things in GTK 2.0. It's basically a bridge between. Right, the accessibility stuff in GTK 2 is fairly complex. There's this ATK interface, which is for applications to provide information about their structure. Then there's another thing called AT-SPI, which is a bridge which grabs that information from the application and provides it through a CORBA interface. And then you have tools like a screen reader or a magnifier, which can then use the CORBA interface to find out the state of the currently active application, and maybe either magnify the area around the focus or do whatever else. The last point on this slide is that you can have multiple types of actions. So the standard action is just one you click on. The next one you've got check, sort of the equivalent of a check menu item or a check button. So we've got a check action, and that one will, so it's got an on-off state with it as well, and that state will be mirrored by any of the menu items or toolbar buttons for that action. I'll just quickly give a demonstration. Okay. This is a very simple one. There's a couple of menus and got a couple of toolbar buttons. So we've got one here, which is a bold action. That's actually the icon for boldface. So if I click on that, let's say check action, and you can see down here that the bold items being checked when I, so that's sort of mirroring the state between those two. And if I click on that one, it's unchecked the toolbar button. And similarly, you can have a set of mutually exclusive actions. So this is sort of like radio buttons, which you can also see on the menu. And got another action here which says disable cut and paste ops. So this one's got this action's got a callback attached to it, which will then go and set the sensitive state for a number of the other actions to disabled. So click on that, and I can't click on these ones anymore. So yeah. Generally, an application's this is just a test application to demonstrate some of the capabilities. I haven't done that in this test application. Usually, it's you're going to be programmatically enabling or disabling actions. It's not really. I mean, you'll do that kind of thing in response to some other form of user input. The other stuff you can see, I've got two bold items here, and they're just displaying the same keyboard shortcut next to them. That's sort of, if I actually had modifiable keyboard accelerators turned on, which I don't actually at the moment, if I changed the keyboard accelerator for bold, you'd actually see both items change at once. So I can do things like that. That's a fairly simple example. Okay. Generally, when you've in a large application, you're going to actually group a number of these actions together. This is grouping by what context the actions actually make sense in. So often you might have a set of actions which should always be available, and they make sense in all state. So like that might be options like to quit the application, to create a new window, to open a new document, and things like that. You might have another set of actions which act on the current document. So that's things like saving a document. And let's say you've got a word processor, you might have, when you're editing a table, you might have yet more actions which only make sense when you're in that particular mode. So you can group together the actions like this, and that's sort of used in the menu merging, which I'll get onto later. In the simplest case, you might just have a single group of actions, and more complex ones, like what I've described above, you'll have multiple ones. Okay. There is a number of the other toolkits which only have this action concept. They don't have menu merging. Like I believe that the Qt library has this concept of actions in it, but they've got a menu merging implementation which is implemented at a higher level for their KOffice suite. And And Java also has the actions concept, but doesn't have merging, unless I've missed it. So the idea of this is that we grab two sort of menu layouts, and we want to merge them together. And hopefully later on, we'll demerge them so that and get back to the original state. So we sort of set up a tree which represents the state of the structure of the menus, and each of the nodes is represented by an action name. Actually, that's one thing I forgot to mention. Yeah, all the actions have names, which you can refer to them by. At each node, you've got you'll specify an action name which it would call. We describe the for the main interfaces for this, we describe the structure of the menus with an XML file. At the moment, I'm using a subset of the Bonobo menu merging XML files, but we've removed all the translatable strings from the UI file so that they're provided by the action objects, which the translators like because it's one less thing to worry about. Here's an example where we might have two user interface files which describe a set of menus. So you can see there's the root element, and then you've got the menu is the menu bar, a set of submenus, you've got a placeholder, which I'll get back to later, and you've got doc item, which is the name the bonobo format uses for toolbars. And then we've got another one which is similar. We've actually got a submenu underneath the placeholder. And when you merge them together, you would end up with this. We actually also keep reference counts on the nodes so that it keeps track of the fact that that we've got two user interface files which have referenced the root node, the menu node, the placeholder one, etc. As you can see, it's added a couple of extra menu items underneath the open menu item. You can probably guess that if I merge them in the other order, you'd actually get a slightly different order. So that actually matters, and it's a bit hard to get around that in some cases. Yes? You'd be able to load. You could probably have them as a string within the application, but quite often you'd want to have them as a separate file. I mean, it's most applications will have some data files anyway, so you may as well have them as a separate file. And also, it means that people can actually experiment with some of the user interface. The other thing which people want to do with these kind of things is to add support for menu editing in applications. So that's one of the areas where you want to have these things separate. Okay. As I was saying, the merging process works on the idea of the node names, so that if you've got two nodes of the same name, then in the combined menu they end up. They'll be represented by the same node, and as I said, you get a reference count which is used in the demerging process. One thing which sometimes trips people up is the fact that you really want to put names on your separators, because otherwise you'll end up with just a single separator in each menu. The new nodes are just appended to their parent container, which is usually okay. There's the idea of placeholders, which sort of acts like which allow you to place extra menu items or something in the middle of a menu. That's used where, like, if you've got a large application, you might have the top level menu bar, your menus at the start, so file, edit, and standard ones like that, have a placeholder for extra menu items, and then help on the end. That's what I had in the previous example. So you can see that in this instance, the placeholder doesn't actually show up in the user interface, but it's just helped place that menu in the middle. Okay. I've got an example of the menu merging. Okay, this is another one. We've actually got three menu merge files. I can get a dump of the. If I just press on the dump tree, I get a list of everything which is in the user interface file, which is basically the node tree. I can go and demerge part of the user interface tree, and you'll lose some of the things and get a dump of that. you can see the placeholder here, which is empty pretty much. That's just sitting between the edit and the help menus here. And adding it back in, I get the extra menu item and the extra top level menu between those. And if you get rid of all of them, then it's gone. And you'll see what I was saying before about them, the order in which you merge does make a difference. So I ended up with a different order there. I would, in your average application, you'd never remove all of your menus. It's generally you've got a base set of menus and you're trying to add extra features depending on your mode. So that, generally you've always got that base bit of user interface there, and you're overlaying extra things which will add extra menu items inside a placeholder or whatever. I don't know if this is going to be usable for the panels and vFolder stuff. Which sort of thing? I thought that was still going to be using basic. That's probably going to still be using different code, which just does a dump of the VFS stuff, isn't it? Or,
yeah, sorry, the
actual
menu items
as I was saying, I don't know whether the panel is going to be the best, is going to be using this sort of thing, because that's a fairly different type of menu, I'd say. You sort of know what I'm... You just... Okay. In the future, one of the things which we've still got to add is we've got to have an interface for adding some dynamic menu items and stuff, because not everything you can describe in your XML file. Often you'll want to be, even if it's just sort of a bit hackish, sometimes you'll be wanting to just add an extra item directly to the menus, which we need an API to do that. We'll get something which is hopefully better than Bonobo, because at the moment for that you've got to basically use snprintf to put together a little bit of XML and then pass that to the library and, well, often pass it to a Corba interface which will then decode it, and it's pretty ugly. The prototype implementation, we need to write up a design document for it, which will kick off the review process, which will happen on GTK Devel List. Really waiting till I've got enough time to get that done. We've currently got a few people who are using this API, just testing it. Has anyone heard of Vista Project? So some of the Swedes have got a branch of that which uses this API. So hopefully you get more users and find out what's working, what's broken in it. If you're interested in, back on at the start about the GNOME development process, you want to look at the GEPs. If you want the code for the menu stuff, it's currently in the libegg module of GNOME CVS. That's pretty much all I've got at the moment. Any questions? Yes? All right. As I was saying about the API stability thing, We've released GNOME 2. GNOME 3, there is no plan for it at the moment. It might happen in a few years, but nothing in GNOME 2 is going to go away until GNOME 3. That's one of the things in the development platform. Yeah, Jeff can remove whatever he wants from the desktop. So that's still going to be there. It's still going to have to be supported. Often we've sort of found better ways of doing things, and the way you handle that is you end up having to support two APIs until you at a point where you can remove the old API. So this is going to be an extra one. Hopefully the Bonobo things will be deprecated eventually. I've got to get Michael to take a look at some. He's a big Bonobo hacker. Get him to take a look at some of this, because while I think I've got stuff set up so that he'd probably be able to hook in a lot of the Bonobo stuff, there's probably some stuff I've missed. So again, that's sort of the design review, which as we've only had a little bit of that so far. Any other questions? When I'm talking about design review here, I'm sort of, this is sort of the developers, this is sort of design review on the user interface. As far as usability goes, that's sort of, this particular bit of code has no user interface other than what's already there. So in that particular case, there is not as much of a need for the usability side and of review, but there is a separate, there is a usability team in GNOME which we actually get a lot of the input on when we're looking at new widgets or extensions to existing widgets. Yes?
Are you looking forward to being Git?
I've already done one Git, so one of the things I probably wasn't all that visible in this other one. We're actually using a different toolbar widget from the standard GTK one, which this is sort of an extension. Oh, don't know what happened there. This is a new toolbar widget which is handling the overflow of items on the toolbar, which is nicer than what the current GTK toolbar does. Already done, yeah. Yeah, so I can actually get to those toolbar buttons on the end. That one, so I've done one, so just got to do another. Yes, I reckon GEPs are good, even if some people don't.
Is there a mechanism for doing, like, bash menus dropping down from the toolbar?
It's basically, right, with this new toolbar, which I've got, which wasn't the subject of this talk, we've actually got pretty easy to add new types of toolbar items. So there's been work, one of the other things which has been worked on for GTK 2.4 is a new combo widget. So presumably we could set up a combo toolbar item, which for handling those sort of things of a button with a drop down next to it. Or we could use a hack similar to what's been used in like Nautilus for its sort of forward and backward buttons. Any other questions?